Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the seventh Young Vistage webinar. We are now international. We've now got people coming from all over the world, from the United States, from Malaysia, Hong Kong, Australia, South Africa, Canada, and of course, in the United Kingdom as well. So there's a lot of people now joining us for this, and welcome to you all, and thank you for giving up your Saturday morning, afternoon, or evening to join us. This session is going to be recorded. And therefore, there will be a recording available for you after the event, and I'll email you the address where you can pick that up and therefore and have it for yourself so you can go over it again. During this time, where contacts is limited and relationships exaggerated, and the gift is that we've got through this pandemic is our relationships or our contacts have increased. There's never been a more important time to establish healthy, vibrant relationships. And it's our emotional intelligence that makes this work. Our ability to see what other people are seeing through their lens and actually treating them, not as how we like to be treated, but as how they like to be treated. And what I've got this morning, so for this Zoom session we're having, it's going to take about, it's an hour long. When you're in the room, remember to stay in the room. There's a Q&A box you'll notice at the bottom of your screen. If you have any questions whatsoever, anything you want to ask, put it into that. And therefore, I will then endeavor to make sure Lynn can answer them as we go through. Science has proven that the more you write down actions to taking, the more likely is you're going to take those actions. Even more, if you tell somebody else what you're going to do, this increases another tenfold. So what I'd like you to do through this webinar is write down anything that you think you're going to do and then repeat that to somebody. And I think it was Stephen Covey in a fabulous book called The Seven Habits of Effective People. He said the best way to learn is to teach. So therefore, if you're teaching somebody else or telling somebody else what you've learned today, that would be a fantastic thing. I can't tell you how pleased I am to have Lynn Leahy with us today. I've known Lynn for many years. In Vistage, she's been around for at least the past 25, 30 years. We've been working together a long time. She's won all the best speakers awards. She comes from a medical social worker's background where she was dealing with children with cerebral palsy and their families. She's worked with in 30 odd countries, I think. She's been around the world. All you people joining us from the Asia Pacific region absolutely know her because that's where she loves to go and she loves to work as she does here in the UK. A business coach, a trainer, a counselor dedicated to people's lives. So as I said, this morning is about emotional intelligence and how important it is. And what Lynn's going to reveal to us is the secrets of actually great relationships. Lynn, over to you.
Thank you, Bob. I am so pleased to be with you. And I'm really looking forward to sharing with you the secrets that I've learned that help you have high emotional intelligence. And I wanted to share them with you because when I was younger, I wish somebody shared them with me. And although we're giving you lots of information, I think what Bob and I want even more than that is we want to excite you about the topic of learning about yourself and about other people. Because if you make that a journey through your life, I know it will help you all your life. It's an absolutely fabulous journey. And it'll lead to you being successful and happy. And a lot of research has shown that having high emotional intelligence is more important than your IQ. It's more important than whether you're born into family wealth, you know, really critical things like that. So what is emotional intelligence? Well, our emotions are just our feelings. You know, we have a whole range of feelings, don't we? Sometimes we're sad. Sometimes we're joyful. Other times we might feel afraid or we might be excited. And if you have high emotional intelligence, you understand a lot more about why you feel the way you do. And you're interested in the power of emotion in other people. And that helps you manage your relationships with people well. And you also, you know, something very important, which we're going to be coming to, which is your feelings will impact on your behavior. Now, if you therefore can learn to control your feelings, you can learn to control your behavior. And that's why you end up more successful in life, because you're able to be flexible in a very wide range of situations. Now, I want to personalize this for you. And I think what I'd like you to do is just start thinking about all your key relationships, the ones that are important to you, with your family, with friends, you know, with teachers, if you're working with colleagues. And just maybe after the workshop, just pause on each relationship and think, is that a fabulous relationship? And hopefully, amongst all your relationships, you'll see a few that are just fabulous. And if you do, that's great, because already you and the other person are showing high emotional intelligence in that relationship. You're finding a way to connect and meet each other's needs. But sometimes some of our relationships, they're important relationships, but they're not as good as they could be. Or sometimes they're great and then something happens and then for a while they're not so good. And I think these secrets will help you to increase the chances that those relationships could start to become fabulous as well. Now, let's say you're going through a difficult period with somebody in your life. Maybe you feel that one of your parents or your brother or sister, particularly if they're older and they're involved in kind of looking after you sometimes, you're not getting on as well as you used to. And from your perception, you feel, well, it's because they always notice and comment when I'm doing something wrong. And, you know, they don't notice all the things I do right. Now, it's human to feel a bit fed up when something isn't going well. But if you just had ordinary emotional intelligence, you'd just keep on complaining about them and thinking, well, it's their fault. And it's not wrong at times to kind of feel like we want to blame somebody else, but you'll never have a fabulous life. Because the first secret of emotional intelligence is you must understand that you cannot make anybody else change the behavior. You can only change your own. And when I work as a mediator, I often work in a situation where each person is saying to me, if you could get them to start doing this, life would be happy. And the other person saying, if you get them to stop doing this, life would be happy. And I keep hoping that one of them is going to have some high emotional intelligence and realize that they can only focus on themselves. So let's say in this situation where you feel like somebody is only noticing what you're doing wrong, and not as much what you're doing right. What you'd start to do with high emotional intelligence is think, I've just realized something important. I don't like it when people notice more what I'm doing wrong than what I'm doing right. I wonder if it's possible that I could do that with anybody else, because I imagine most people don't like that. And if you're able to be honest with yourself, which is part of emotional intelligence, you sometimes realize that actually you might be doing that even with the person that you're struggling with. You know, maybe you take your sister or your brother or your mum or whoever for granted. You know, you don't often comment or notice the fact that they produce food for you and they look after you when you're sick. And rather than thinking, well, if they could be different, I would, a really highly emotional intelligence says, okay, I'm the only thing I've got control over. And Nelson Mandela said, be the behavior you wish to see in the world. So you think, I'm just going to notice more what they're doing right, and I'm just going to thank them for it. And if you do that, there's no guarantees that the relationship will improve, but try it. It probably will. And it probably will because if they don't feel undervalued, they begin to feel less stressed. And if we feel less stressed, we start to relax and we have the ability to notice people and events around us more. And so they're more likely to notice what you're doing right and thank you for it as well. So it's just a little example of how we have to start with the first secret. Rather than thinking if everybody else could watch this workshop, life would be great. They might watch it, they might not be interested, but you're the person you can control. Now, before I go on to share the other 9 secrets with you, I want to give you the big picture of emotional intelligence, because it's a complex picture. And I'm going to talk through 5 what are called dimensions. There are subdivisions in each dimension, which we won't have time to look at in an hour. They're called realms. But I'll certainly give you the overview of each dimension. And after this, Bob is going to put up 2 different polls. We want you to, first of all, put up the ones that you think you've got some strength in. And, you know, don't feel like, you know, you're being a big head if you said you've got a strength. If you think one of the dimensions or even 2 of the dimensions you're really good at, we'd like you to let us know that. And then afterwards, we'll ask you to say if there's any of these dimensions that you think you perhaps really need to develop. And that'll give us a sense of whether there's a lot of similarity or difference in the group. And it may help us think about future work we may choose to do with you. So we're going to start with the first one, which is self-perception. And self-perception just basically means, do you like yourself? And we're going to talk about liking yourself without conditions, but do you think you're worthy? And it also means, if other people were describing you, is the image you have of yourself, would it closely match their image of you, or would you have blind spots? Now, that could go either way, because sometimes your perception is everybody thinks I'm great, and some people do and some people might not. But sometimes you haven't learned to value yourself enough and you don't realise just how fabulous you are. And your blind spot is you don't realise how special you are. Self-perception also means you've started to think a bit more about your life and what you want from your life, and you have a strong interest in learning to develop. So that's the first dimension. The second dimension is self-expression. And that's, yes, how you present yourself to the world, you know, how you have your hair done, how you dress, those things. But it's much deeper than that. It's, can you influence people? Do you have the ability to ask for what you want in a way that makes people be more likely to give you what you want? Can you express yourself well? And being consistently assertive comes under self-expression, and being able to express the whole range of emotions as well. Some people are great at anger and not so great at love, or some people are good at love, but they can't ever say if they feel angry. And sometimes things happen that we do feel angry about. The next dimension is interpersonal relationships. And this just means that you have an ability to create, and then this is the important bit, and maintain, you know, make them lasting, some really deep, meaningful relationships. And you're able to do that with all kinds of different personalities. It's not just with people who are very like you. You can get on well with people from different ages, from different backgrounds, from different religions. You have real flexibility in your ability to create and maintain great relationships. The next dimension is stress management. Now, stress is real. It's a set of physical changes that happen inside our body if we ever feel threatened or we think we're in danger. And it's actually always triggered by muscle tension. We don't intend to tense our muscles. Something happens that we're not happy about, and we unconsciously tense our muscles. Now, if you have high emotional intelligence, you understand your body needs an optimum amount of stress. You understand it's not about getting rid of any stress that could ever come your way. You know, I felt stress just before we started this webinar, but it's what I call desired stress. Because, you know, I'm a little bit nervous. I know there's going to be almost 300 people, you know, who've registered, and what if I get it wrong? All those things go on. But I'm also a bit excited, and so my eyes were shiny. And we need some desired stress in our life. But we have to make sure it doesn't tip into too much undesired stress. And conflict with other people creates a lot of undesired stress. And that's why really working on your relationships can help you find and maintain your stress optimum. The next dimension is decision making. And this is about making decisions where emotions are involved, the emotions of other people, the emotions of yourself. Now, as part of that, you often need to be good at taking in other people's opinions, not believing you're the only person who knows the truth. And so you'd ask quite a lot of open questions. So how would you see that? You know, let me understand why you might have a different view. And you're really listening to take in information. And you also, for decision-making, have to be good at something called impulse control, which just means being able to pause. Because let's say somebody upsets you, maybe a friend says something that's a bit thoughtless. And if you had high emotional intelligence, the best thing to do would be to wait till you're on your own to talk to them about it. But if you feel that you're going to tell them then and then, whoever's going to witness it, embarrassing your friend and other people, that's not showing high emotional intelligence. So I think, Bob, you've got the poll up here, haven't you? And if I could just hand back to you, Bob, do you want to just explain to people what you'd like to do?
Here's the first poll. I'll give you a minute to vote. So if you just press the button you want on there, then we can share the results. So you've got some choices you can make there. And I can see they're coming in thick and fast at the moment, which is really great. So if you just now, as I said, answer that, and then I'll share them. Back over to you, Lynn, and I'll bring up the results as they come up.
Okay, great. And then after this, we're going to go on to ask you to pinpoint the area or areas that you think you still need to develop. And I'll just, while we're waiting for this to, I'll just give you another quick whistle stop tour of the five. So self-perception is liking yourself, not having any blind spots about how people perceive you, and love learning and having a plan for your life. Have you got the results in from this one yet, Bob?
I'm going to let them up there. The poll's coming to an end. Well done, all those that's voted. Those that haven't, you could look at what the results are. So end of the poll, and let me just share those results with you, Lynn.
Great.
Yes, I think you can see up on there, you'll see it. It's interpersonal relationships is leading out ahead there.
Yeah.
Decision-making coming in. So it's kind of even between all of them, other than interpersonal relationships, which is a strong one.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the strength of people. That's great. Okay. Well,
and just on this one, just there's a little glitch within Zoom. Sometimes it doesn't take the poll down. So when you've seen enough of the poll, let me just stop sharing right now. If you just click the red button at the top of the screen there, it'll take it off your screen.
Fantastic. So while you're just putting up the poll so that we can find out which one or ones they think they really need to develop, I'll just complete explaining what they were again. So we've talked about self-perception, which is to do with, you know, liking yourself, etc. Then there was self-expression, which is having, it's to do with how you present to the world and whether you can influence people and be assertive and ask for what you want in a good way. Then there was interpersonal relationships, which was having deep, meaningful relationships with a wide range of people. Stress management was finding your stress optimum and staying within that. And decision making was to do with trying to take in as much information before you solve complex problems that involve emotion in you and other people, and having the ability to wait. So if you could just click on the ones you think we still need to develop. I'll hand back to you.
We've got a very responsive audience here. They're really bringing these in very fast. We're about 80%, 90% of them have completed it right now. So I'm literally going to give it another 5 seconds, and then I'll just show you the results.
Fantastic.
Here we go now. So they're all nearly there. So well done, everybody. Let's have a look at what the results are. And there you have it. Stress management has come out way ahead on this one. It looks like, and it's not surprising, is it, Lynn? I mean, if you think where we are at the moment with lockdowns all over the globe, etc., that's something we all need to actually be able to start handling. Is the stress out there? I think it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's really helpful. And some of the things I'll be looking at today will be useful to thinking about managing stress. But maybe now you've identified it's an area that you might want to do more work on yourself, and we'll stay alert to that. Okay. So I'm going to move on now, and I want to share the second secret to high emotional intelligence. And it's really important for the decision-making dimension. And that is, don't make judgments about people based on what others say about them. I can't tell you how much distress this causes in the world. And it can happen on so many levels. Of course, we have the media, we have social media, and it's tempting to think that if something was written, you know, by a journalist, it must be true. Well, I could give you lots of examples of things that come out in the papers that are not true. And many of us have our truth, and we look for information which confirms our view of the world. And then what gets even more scary now is anything you click on that you're interested in, that goes into some database, and they send you even more of the same. So you start getting to believe that a viewpoint you have is kind of what everybody else believes, because you don't realize you're just inviting in more information on your own viewpoint. But I'm not just talking about the media. I'm talking also about other people. And it could be people you trust who tell you something. And what I want you to realize is it isn't that they were lying, but you see, everything that happens, it's not what happens to us, it's how we process it. It's how we think about it. The same thing can happen to two people. They interpret it in a different way. And so they have a totally different experience. So if I just keep it simple, let's say I see somebody struggling with something that I feel like I have some experience and maybe I can offer them something useful in. So if I say to them, can I help you with that? Let's say I say that to a person who's been raised with the belief that that's what we should all do. We should all help each other. It's a real strength to give and receive help. And that's what makes the world go round. So when I say, can I help you? They just think, oh yeah, great. Nice woman here. She said she could help me. And they might say, yes, thank you, Lynn. Or they might say, actually, I think I've almost finished. I think I'm going to be okay. But thank you. It's nice of you to offer. And we've had this really great interchange. But let's say for some reason, as part of my upbringing, I've been raised to believe it's a weakness to need help. It's certainly a weakness to accept help. And in fact, people who help you are kind of saying that they know more than you. They've probably been rather patronising. So if I say to another person, can I help you with that? They might be thinking, don't you think I've got a brain cell? And they just switch off. And each person, when they talk about me later, will give a very different impression of me and what I was aiming to do, because it was processed through how they see the world, not what my intention was. And just before I leave this one, another thing that can happen is people can change the tone with which they repeat something was said, and it can totally give you the wrong impression. Now, again, they're not doing it to be nasty. They're doing it because they interpreted that way. One of the things that people do in the UK, and I think as a generalisation, probably young men do it more than young women, and you know, you can challenge me on this one, and that is do something called banter. And banter means that you say something to somebody which sounds a little bit insulting, but you say it in a jokey way, and it's a sign of affection. And it kind of means, look, we're such great mates, you know, we can even insult each other. So let's say, you know, you came down and you'd got some new clothes and you were feeling great, but one of your friends says, look at the state of you. Now that's banter, because although they're implying that you don't look good, the kind of smile, everything is saying, I've noticed you do look good. But if you didn't understand banter, maybe you'd take offence and say, you know, I'd gone to all this trouble and they said, look at the state of you. And that sounds very different, doesn't it? Or maybe somebody tells you that something was said, and maybe even it was, but they perhaps, for whatever reason, don't tell you something else was said as well. A friend tells you that another friend has said that they think you're bossy. You think, gosh, how could they be so mean to say that about me? Well, they may not have said it, but even if they did, maybe they said, yeah, they can be a bit bossy, but I love them to pieces and I'm always glad they've got my back. So just please don't make judgments about other people based on what other people tell you. Make judgments based on how they are with you. So that was the second secret of high emotional intelligence. The third secret of high emotional intelligence is probably the one that's the most important in a way, and I've already touched on it, your thoughts will probably determine the quality of your life. Choose them very, very wisely. And even Buddha said, with our thoughts, we create our world. I'm not a Buddhist, but I do like some of the Buddhist teachings. And I want to just share with you this concept here. I don't know what it's really called. My colleague and I call it the Mercedes model because of the shape. But it's about understanding that there's a direct correlation between three things. Now, the only thing we ever see of each other is each other's behaviour. That's all you'll ever see of me, and it's all I'll ever see of you. And our behaviour is made up of our words, our tone of voice, and body language is kind of really all the visuals. Now, a lot of the evidence is that your words count for less than 10% of the impact you really have on people. It's your tone of voice and body language that makes them decide whether they'll like and respect you. And you may have heard that saying, it's not what you say, it's the way you say it. But behind our behaviour sits two crucial things, our thoughts and our feelings. If we ever change any one of those three, the other two instantly change. You cannot change one without the other two changing. Now, going on a journey of emotional intelligence often gets you to think more deeply about the thoughts you've created about yourself and other people. But sometimes you can just help yourself by finding ways to feel better. And I think one of the simplest ways I've seen people coming in here is by using music. Playing the kind of music that you absolutely love. And when you put on the sort of music you love, even if you are feeling a bit down, you'll start to feel a little bit better. And once you start to feel better, your thoughts will start to improve. You'll think, yeah, there's been pain stuck in on lockdown, but at least I've got some great music to listen to. And yeah, I'm just going to chill out here a while. I never dance. And you'll find that if that's happened, when you go into the next room to whoever's there, rather than going, hi, how are you? You're much more likely to go, hi, how are you? And behaviour breeds behaviour. If you say to somebody, hi, how are you? If they're actually emotionally intelligent, they don't normally go, well, I feel great, because they feel like they're not in harmony with you. So if you're low, they often go, I'm okay, how are you? And then you both have a miserable time together. But if you say, how are you? They want to say, I'm all right, thanks, how are you? So that's the Mercedes model. And it's just an insight into realising that with our thoughts, we create our world. And you can actually choose your thoughts. Practising the habit of gratitude is one of those really important ways to manage pressure and stress. And I don't mean you don't have the right to be down. You know, really sad things happen. You know, many people they love have died, and you have every right to be down. But practicing the habit of gratitude just means in a reasonable amount of time, in relationship to whatever difficulty you have faced, you just start to notice that the world's still a beautiful place and that there's a lot of joy in it that we can be part of. Okay, I'm going to move on and now share the fourth secret. And the fourth secret is that your relationships, I probably should say, will probably be as good as the amount of praise and recognition you give. But I used to wonder if I was exaggerating that, but I actually believe it's so crucial. I'd been working as a marital counsellor for a while, and I was seeing some repetitive patterns in why perhaps couples weren't happy. Things were breaking down with all the sadness that can bring for themselves, for the children. And one of them was that sometimes we weren't realising just how much we thrive when we get some kind of recognition and praise. Now, for this to really make sense, I also have to share the fifth secret as well, which has a link. And the fifth secret is that different people need different kinds of recognition. And sometimes it isn't that the person isn't trying to show the value, another person. It's just that they have a different way of doing it, and it's not what this other person wants. So people kind of what I call miss each other. So some people believe that if you really care about somebody, you do that verbally. You say things like, I love you. You say you're fantastic. You say you look handsome or beautiful. Some people don't do that. They think that isn't the way to show value. You know, if you care about somebody, your face lights up when they walk in the room, you smile, you give them a big hug, you know, they're very tactile. They demonstrate they care through how much they touch or they pat you when they go past. Some people think, no, if you care about somebody, you save up and you buy them a very expensive gift. And some people believe the more expensive the gift, the more you're showing that you value them. And some people think, no, you do buy them gifts, but no, that doesn't matter how valuable it is. You've got to buy them a thoughtful gift. You have to remember something that they said they liked a long time ago and see if you can find it on the internet. Or, you know, it doesn't even have to be expensive. Maybe you don't have any money, but not only do you pick wild flowers for somebody, but you pick the colours that you know they like, even though it might take you twice as long. Some people, they don't do that. They think, no, if you really care about somebody, you look out for them. You take care of them. You look after their needs. It's called acts of service. And that can be just working really hard so we can all have a holiday, or it might be cooking a meal, or, you know, helping bring the firewood in. But they show they care in these very practical ways. And then another way, and again, there are some cultural differences here, is the banter, which is particularly strong in the UK, where you say something which is insulting, but the subplot is you only do it with people you really care about. And the problem is, if you do that with people who weren't raised that way, of course, that wouldn't show very high emotional intelligence. Now, I have a friend, sadly he's died now, but if I ever had my hair done differently, he didn't say, oh, you look really nice, Lynn. He'd say things like, who did it? I'll get them for you. So that kind of sounds insulting, because he's implying that it doesn't look good, that you'd have to go and hit somebody because they've made such a mess of my hair. But really what he's saying is, I have noticed, Lynn. And it was just, he was raised in a different way to give recognition. And if you have high emotional intelligence, you understand people have different ways of giving you recognition. And you're not always saying they've got to give you in the way that you value. You can see that from their view of the world, they were trying to say they valued you. But perhaps you have the flexibility to give it in different ways as well. So I think this is worth another poll, because we've also got a great cross-section, Bob, of people around the world, haven't we? So if I hand over to you, Bob, and if you could put up the poll, and what I'm asking people to do is just to say which forms of recognition they kind of use more often. I think we'll say you can have more than one vote for this, because sometimes we have one or two ways that we tend to give. But it'd be interesting to see what seems to be the most given way of giving recognition in our audience today. So over to you, Bob.
It's coming up thick and fast again on here. Thank you, everybody, for being so responsive to this. We're over 55% already gone in there. And it looks fairly even at the moment. It's funny. Verbal is high, and so is jokes. Banter seems to be high as well. So I don't know whether that's just the UK contingency, but I know we do it here all the time. High touch is coming at 35%. And practical help is coming in at 8. I'm going to give it just another few seconds, and then I'm going to end the poll. So anybody that hasn't voted, please, you've got 5 seconds to do it now. So just key in your numbers. And here we go.
Great
response. Really appreciate it. Let me show you the results, Lynn.
Yeah, please. That's great. Okay. All right. And actually, there's quite a broad spread as well, isn't there?
It certainly is.
Touch practical help. I think we've just, I realise we've left the gifts off, unfortunately, Bob. Sorry about that.
Oh, sorry.
But not to worry. We know that gifts are out there as well, anyway. Okay, that's fantastic. Right, thank you very much, Bob. So I'm going to go on now to share with you the sixth secret for high emotional intelligence. And I did touch on this before when I mentioned self-perception. You've got to learn to really like yourself without conditions. Now, sometimes people say, well, what do you mean? I like myself. And sometimes they do. But if you really start to think about it, maybe you have conditions. You like yourself if you're strong and you don't ask for any help. Or you like yourself if you don't make yourself too vulnerable. Or you like yourself if you make other people happy. I had to come to terms with the fact that I had a condition on my self-image was I like myself if I'm excellent at what I do. It's called a need to be perfect. And it doesn't mean I think I'm perfect. I never think I'm perfect. It just means I only let myself feel really good if I've kind of reached a very high standard. And it isn't that that's wrong. It's not a wrong thing to have, but it creates a lot of stress because we can't always meet these conditions. You can't always please everybody. Sometimes you do need help. Sometimes I do something and it was okay, but it wasn't exceptional. And there are things outside that stress us, but sometimes we're stressing ourselves the most. Now, it's quite a long journey to learn to like yourself without conditions. And I'm hoping this workshop will interest you on perhaps going further along that journey. And I'll just try and give you a couple of tips, things that certainly have helped me. The first thing is try and be around people who make you feel good about yourself. I know sometimes we have to be with people who don't, but encourage friendships where people are respectful of you and they're not embarrassed to tell you what you're doing right. And then you accept, if they pay you a compliment, don't say, well, what are you after? Because if you don't learn to accept the kind of recognition that they're giving you as a gift, you're not letting them help you to create a stronger self-image. And also, I did something in my 30s. It probably sounds a bit sad, but I think it helped me. This was in the days before email, so how old am I? But if somebody sent me like a letter or a card, you know, sometimes they were thanking me or saying I'd done something that had been useful to them, rather than just reading it and thinking, oh, that's nice, you know, I would actually keep it in a box. And then on a day when I was struggling because I'd not been excellent at something I'd done and I was struggling, one of the things I'd do is I'd just go back and sit with a cup of tea and read through these things in my box. And it helped me kind of get myself more in balance. Any strategy that helps you, go for it. But you've got to learn to like yourself and you've got to be able to learn to talk about yourself positively. Because if you go for interviews and you're not going in thinking this person's lucky if they get me because I work hard, you know, I don't know everything, but I'm not afraid to ask if I don't know. If you don't go in thinking that, you'll go in thinking, oh, gosh, I hope I get the job. There are probably other people who are better than that. Now, do you remember your thoughts affect your behaviour? And it's likely you won't get the job if you're thinking the second things. And somebody will get it who might not be as good as you. You've got to learn to give yourself some positive self-talk. Okay, I want to share now the seventh secret of high emotional intelligence. And that is, you've got to learn to ask for what you want. I'll come back to the bit about with kindness, but you've also got to understand that the other person does have the right to say no if you ask for what you want. Now, in my experience, quite a lot of people never get what they want in life because sometimes they've been raised to believe it's selfish to ask for what you want. I don't believe it's selfish to ask for what you want as long as you do it with kindness and you accept that if they say no, that's it. Some people won't ask for what they want because they believe that if somebody says no, it'll be like a condemnation of them. They'll be saying no to you as a whole person, and they're not. They're just refusing your request. And you have to not muddle yourself up with the actual request. And it's very important that you learn to ask with kindness. And to me, assertiveness is about being kind. It means being clear, honest, direct, but always respectful of the other person. And I think it's one of the real key to life, being consistently assertive. And because if you don't ask for what you want, you just drop hints and hope they've picked them up, and then they don't. You don't kind of perhaps get what you wanted for Christmas, or you keep dropping hints that you'd like them to be more verbally positive with you and they don't pick that up. Then eventually it comes out with real unkindness. It comes out with a bit of an aggressive jab to it. You know, when I was working with a couple, I'd sometimes say, okay, let's go back to when you were really happy. Let's think about the things that you used to do, how you were behaving, that just meant you really enjoyed each other's company. And then let's think if, you know, maybe you've got out of the habit of doing that. And perhaps one of them would say, well, we used to just have fun, and we used to cuddle, you know, we'd actually sit on the sofa and we'd kind of tickle each other and we'd have a cuddle. And I said, okay, so that used to work for you. That was great. So have you asked if you can cuddle more? And then some of the anger comes out, and I'll say, I did. I said only last week, didn't I? I said you'd never cuddle me. Well, you don't look very cuddly when you're kind of speaking to people like that. And if you ask with that aggression in your voice, the person doesn't want to meet your needs because they're hurt and perhaps even angry. And then you can justify that, see, even when you ask, you don't get it. But you were asking without kindness. And there's no guarantee that if you ask with kindness, you'll get your needs met. But I guarantee you'll get them more, met more. Okay, I'm going to go on to the eighth secret. I didn't know whether you needed me to pause yet at all, Bob, or shall I go to the end and then take the questions? What's your instinct on this? Hi, Bob. Okay, I'll carry on. The eighth secret is...
I was on mute. I do apologise. There's a couple of questions. Jacob's been asking as we go through there. So if how do you help people who don't think they need help or think help is a weakness? How do you handle that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. The truth is, you in an extreme, you can't, because we're back to that first secret. You can't make anybody change if they don't want to change themselves. But people learn such a lot in life through modelling. So if you model when you're with them that you don't think it's a problem to ask for help, you'll take help from anybody, that normally helps it be a bit more acceptable to them. And if you're offering when they know you really care about them, and you can even say, look, if I can't help you, who can? You know, I'm your best friend. Again, you may increase the chances that they will let you help, but there's absolutely no guarantee.
I've got another question here. I don't quite understand it. Maybe you do. How does the shadow archetypes figure in this approach?
The shadow archetypes. I've got a vague memory of archetypes, but I'd be dragging it up from the depths of my memory. So I'm going to
then
say...
Leave that one. Maybe the anonymous can come back and clarify. And yeah. The other one... Can music also be negative after music can be played for going into war, to fire up anger?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, music can bring up a whole range of emotions. Sometimes it brings up deep sadness because we associate it with somebody we love. And sometimes it's a positive sadness because we're thinking in a positive way about somebody we love who liked that tune. But if you know you need to get into a better place, yes, don't put on any music that gives you anything other than joyful emotions.
That's all the questions at the moment.
Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you. So we'll go back to looking at the eighth secret. And that is you've really got to learn to be deeply interested in other people's beliefs. And I'm going to come on shortly after to thinking about being an active listener as well. And that means you have to ask questions, open questions. And this is how you get in more information or become a much rounded person. Try to stop believing that you know the truth. There's a lot of truths out there. Now, what I'm telling you isn't the truth. It's just my opinion. And hopefully you'll be interested in it, but maybe you can, there'll be other truths out there. There are people who believe other things. And the more you can take in and think, what could work in my world, in my culture, in my family circumstances, the more you'll grow. And it's easy when people are initially saying something we don't agree with to kind of jump in and say, well, that's not right, or I know the statistics on that. And maybe you stop them getting to something that could have been helpful. So try to listen to other people's point of view with curiosity. Just be curious, because if you're being curious, you actually can't be judgmental. And one of the things we need in relationships is we need to feel that the person with us is non-judgmental. It's more important than any skills you can learn. And if we feel somebody is judging us when we're speaking all the time, you just won't have a good relationship with them. You're not actually showing high emotional intelligence. So instead, you could just say, okay, that's interesting. Help me understand why you believe that. And it can be on big issues, climate change or politics. But sometimes it's even just small things. Maybe they want to say, you know, the thing I really want to do, you know, after lockdown is I'm really excited. Let's go to the cinema again. And you're thinking, I don't want to go to the cinema. It costs too much money. You know, we can download anything. It's more comfortable in the house. But rather than just cutting them off, say, tell me why you'd be excited to go to the cinema. And they might say, well, I feel like we talk more in the car, you know, and I feel like getting dressed up and feel like I'm going somewhere special. And well, the adverts come on and I really like that because, you know, they show you the other films that are coming and that. And you might find things you just never take into account, stuck in your world, thinking about why that's not a good thing to do. But also learn to be an active listener, because it's good that you're prepared to listen, but the other person won't feel like you're a good listener unless you're an active listener. And that means you have to show you've heard. And I want to just share with you a skill. And you need this skill for other people to believe you have empathy, which is one of the realms of emotional intelligence. And the skill is actually called paraphrasing. And just so I'm not making any assumptions, I just want to define what it is. Paraphrasing is when you repeat a word or a short phrase that the person has just used, and you repeat it back to them. But you don't repeat it like a parrot. You can use a few words they've used, but you use a few others to show that you've taken their meaning. And if they express any emotion in a tone of voice and body language, you try to put that emotion into words to show you've picked it up. So if we go back to the example about the cinema, if you just go, oh, okay, that's interesting, well, at least you gave them some airtime. But if instead you said, you know, that's really interesting, can I just be sure I've got this? I mean, I think you're saying that it's like the whole event of going to the cinema that's it even makes you excited. You love the fact that you can dress up, that, you know, we chat more on the way, and that then you can almost plan the next thing you're going to get excited about. And that's showing you've really heard. And the beauty is, not only does it show you've heard, sometimes it helps you realize you've misunderstood a bit. They say, well, no, I didn't quite mean that. And you can start adjusting and your understanding of them. So it's a really important skill. And I'm not saying you should be paraphrasing all the time in social conversation. It will become quite irritating. But when somebody's telling you something complex or something that really matters to them, that's when it's really important to show you've entered their world and you've taken their meaning.
Okay. Then there's questions coming in here really about relationships. I'm getting Henry and quite a few anonymous ones coming through. How do you deal, for example, with your father, who always thinks he's right and it's high and doesn't want to listen to you? How do you deal with a relationship at home where they reject any kind of help or what you're going to give them? So how do you get them to a better place, I think, is coming through from four or five different ways. And I hope all those people have asked those questions, they've got it the right way around. But it seems that this expression is going on.
Okay, well, I hope I touched before on that issue about trying to help people who perhaps don't want to be helped. The issue of somebody with authority over is, you know, a parent who we feel won't listen to us. That is a very hard one. And sometimes it's about choosing your timing. You know, don't have the conversation when they're stressed and tired. Try and be a place. And sometimes even say, almost let them know when they're calmer, can we have a talk? And I'm hoping you'll just let me finish. I'm a bit nervous about having this conversation. Could you just let me say it? Now, it depends on your parents. You know, I do know occasionally people are in very difficult situations and they just have to keep themselves safe. But often it's that we're getting the timing wrong. And if you could choose a time where they're relaxed and say it with kindness, there's a greater chance they'll listen.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to move on to talk through the ninth secret. And the ninth secret for high emotional intelligence is be cautious about giving advice. Try and help somebody just see their options instead. Now, I understand why we want to give advice, and this might tie in a bit with this, you know, helping people question that's coming through. We want to advise them because we want to make life better for them. But the trouble is, our advice is all linked to our view of the world, our strengths, our coping strategies, and it might not work in their world. So if your parents were very open to your point of view, you know, you might be saying, oh, just tell your dad this, and you don't know how their dad behaves, you could get them harmed because they might see that response as cheek. So if you want to be a really good friend, stop trying to give advice and just say, okay, this is the problem. Let's just brainstorm all the choices you have and let's together think about the kind of the advantages and the disadvantage of each option. But then it's important you decide what you're going to do because you're going to have to cope with the consequence of it. And I've seen a lot of relationships struggle because one person keeps giving the other one advice. And if it's advice they wanted, they think you're wonderful. And if they don't, they sometimes try and avoid you because you're going to say, did you do what I said? And they don't know how to say, it doesn't work in my world. The final secret I want to share with you is to create a plan for your life. And then we'll talk about how not being afraid to change it is also important. Now, when I say create a plan for your life, I don't mean you have to have some, you know, you don't have to be super ambitious. You know, I'm going to play for Manchester United at football, or I'm going to be one of the first astronauts to land on Mars. If that's what you want, great, that's fine, go for it. But you don't have to be ambitious. It's just about creating the sort of life you want to live. So if you love animals, think, well, do I want to go through the training to be a vet? Will that be what would really make me happy? Or will I be happy enough if I do something else and I just have lots of animals in my life? You know, do you want to travel or not? And if you do want to travel, are you happy to do it backpacking, really being on the cheap and cope with some of the discomfort that will be there sometimes? Or would you rather work really hard, get a better job, work for a few years and then travel with a bit more comfort? And it's important to realise that things are created twice, once inside our head. And once you have that image in your head, it isn't that then something magical happens. It just kind of appears. It's that that image informs what you say no to. And if you don't know what to say no to, you end up on paths that don't make you happy. You agree to a promotion, but it means you're going to live away from people you love. Create the plan you want. And as Bob said earlier, if you actually write it down and tell somebody what your plan is, it's more likely to happen. But then don't be afraid to change it. We don't have enough information to make a plan for the rest of our life. Maybe you start training to be a vet and then you find it wasn't quite what you thought it was. Well, okay, maybe give it a bit longer to be sure. But if you're hating it, you've only got one life. Retrain, do something else. And If you don't know where you're going, every road leads there. And that's why it's important to have a plan. Sometimes as a counsellor, I'm talking to somebody and they're not necessarily much older than some of our audience here, you know, late 20s, and they don't know why they feel down. Everything's okay. The job's okay. Money's okay. The relationships are okay. And they feel really miserable. And I usually say, where did you think your life would be by now? And they say, I don't know. It just wasn't here. If you don't know where you're going, every road leads there. Sometimes people won't make a plan because there's an underground fear that what if I aim for something and then I don't achieve it and I'll have failed. So I'll be a failure. So there's no point planning for everything. Well, I don't agree with that. It doesn't matter actually if you fail. You won't achieve everything you wish to, but it took a lot of courage, and at least you've got a great chance. And along the journey, you might take a different direction anyway. My sister sent me this quote some time ago, and at the time it meant something, I think, to both of us. And so I just wanted to read it. It's by Theodore Roosevelt. And he said, it's not the critic who counts, nor the man or woman who points at the other person has stumbled. It's very easy to criticize when you're not having to do it yourself. The credit belongs to the man or woman who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust, sweat and blood, who strives valiantly and comes up short again and again, because there's no effort that doesn't face error and shortcoming. But who does strive to accomplish the deed? And if they fail while daring greatly, their place will never be with those timid souls who never knew victory nor defeat. And I just wanted to end on that to say, succeeding isn't what it's about. It's about having an interesting, varied life, learning and helping other people learn as much as you can so you can live the life you want to lead and be as happy as possible. So we'll just end on the 10 secrets. I believe you're just going to pop them up for me again. And I won't go through them all in detail. But in brief, it is, understand you can't make somebody else change the behaviour. I'm not saying you can't influence them. They respect you enormously, but there's no guarantee. Stay focused on what you've got control over. Don't make judgments about other people based on what other people or the media tell you about them. Make your own decisions based on your own interaction with people. Your thoughts will have the biggest impact on your life. Choose those thoughts wisely. Your relationships will probably be as good as the amount of praise and recognition you're prepared to give to other people. But understand that different people need different kinds of recognition. And compromise. If you're not getting quite what you need, because they perhaps were trying to do it by acts of service or in a different way, but you have some variety in the way you can give recognition. Go on that journey of learning to like yourself without conditions. Ask for what you want. It's not selfish to ask for what you want, but ask with kindness and accept they do have the right to say no, and that's not rejecting you personally. Be really interested in other people's points of view. It's a fabulous way to learn. I've had my best education by asking questions. And people can teach you things from every walk of life. When I lived in Malaysia, I actually think I learned the most about the culture from the taxi drivers. I just asked them to help me, and they told me so many amazing things I probably couldn't have ever learned any other way. Be cautious about giving advice. I know your intention is pure, but it doesn't often work for the other person, and it can actually put a barrier in the relationship. Help them see their options instead and just think about the pros and cons, and then let them decide what they're going to do. That's been a really good friend. And just create the life you want, the life you want to live. Have a plan. Be flexible. Things change. Okay, I'm going to stop there and hand back to you, Bob. Thank you. Okay. I know you're probably still on mute, Bob, are you? So I'll talk for a moment till you're back with us.
I am. No, I'm back. I'm back here now. Lynn, thank you very much indeed for all that. There's quite a few questions coming up. I don't know if you can see on your screen, Lynn, the Q&As have been answered already, but you might want to just pull them up right now. And as I'm talking, look through that, and if we can get some brief answers for those. But really, what I've heard through this is that what I said in the beginning, that emotional intelligence is really about your relationships with other people.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm getting the feeling that my emotion is a relationship you're having with yourself. It's about self-awareness. It's about who I am and how I then portray that out in a kind and considerate way so others respond to me. Am I wrong in thinking that way? Have I got the wrong end of the stick on that?
No, absolutely right. It's a journey with yourself. It's about understanding more about yourself and learning to like yourself more. And actually, if you can learn to be kind to yourself, you actually have true energy to be kind to other people. You know, sometimes, you know, when on a plane, they say put on your own oxygen mask first.
And no, you know, just say that again. What does that mean? I don't understand. Sorry.
They just say on an aeroplane, they sometimes say, if we need oxygen, put your own oxygen mask on first. And some people think, oh, that's really selfish. Why wouldn't you save everybody else? Well, yes, you would save everybody else. But if you don't have your own oxygen mask on, you might save three people. But if you took 10 minutes to put your own on, you might be able to save 30 people. So it's not wrong to learn to take care of yourself. And that's actually a huge part of emotional intelligence as well.
Emotional intelligence is looking at it. The other thing that's coming up as you look through those questions on there, there is an awful lot about the relationship with other people. What does love look like if they're looking at it differently? How do I treat my father? How do you treat somebody who's being aggressive to you? All of those areas. And it's almost, as I read through those questions that are coming up, it's, I think people are looking for technique. Is that the right, yeah, right way of looking at this?
Well, I do understand sometimes we do need techniques. So if somebody's being aggressive with you, for example, the most important thing is to keep yourself safe, actually. No heroics, you know. If it's somebody who could harm you and you can run, run. But if it's just verbal aggression, and I shouldn't say just verbal aggression because that's not nice either. Sometimes you have to not have the conversation with somebody while they're being aggressive. They can't hear you. So sometimes you might just let them get it out the system and then say, I really want to talk to you about this, but can we just go and make a cup of tea first and then we'll talk? And that gives you a little bit of downtime as well. Or just say, because we're both upset at the moment, shall we talk about this tomorrow after we've had a walk? And they might go, no, we'll talk about it now. You can't make somebody change. You keep getting back, but you could just say, okay, I just think we'd get a better outcome if we did. You go, Bob.
Then you go first. I'm just interrupting you. Please, you go first.
Sorry. I noticed there are a couple of questions there about connecting with people remotely. And it is hard. You know, I do accept it can feel hard to connect with people remotely, but the truth is it depends what you talk about. I know you can't hug somebody, but the more vulnerable you're prepared to make yourself normally, the safer the other person thinks. And if you want to connect with other people, make yourself a bit vulnerable. Call a friend who's, you know, wasn't on this seminar and tell them what you've learned about yourself and how it's made you feel, even if it did make yourself a bit vulnerable. And you might find they start saying, oh, yeah, I feel like that as well. And you'll find that you'll connect even if you're having to do it remotely. So quick answer.
Thank you. Thank you for all that. And the one that's just popping out to me here, and I think I know the answer, but is it okay to cut friendships or sever ties?
Yes. Sometimes you're really putting a lot of effort and whatever you do, remember you can't change the other person and you have the right to walk away if this is a really unhealthy relationship for you. Yeah.
Thank you. And I think from that as well, you know, with all relationship, everything that's going on out there from where I sit, there is always a minimum, at least 10% that is good and there's a gift in it. And if, you know, you mentioned earlier about active listening, et cetera, and it's listening for the gift and sometimes and even in an argument or something you totally disagree with. It's where's the gift in this? What can I take? Where can I move myself? What action? What do I take out of this? I think is an important part. So Lynn, I think we're coming to the end of this now, which is a great shame. I think I could probably go on listening to you for at least another hour or so. I think your insights and really the credibility you bring to this topic is quite phenomenal. What we've learned over this period of time is really this. There's 10 secrets. If I take those secrets and start into them into my life, my stress is reduced down. My self-awareness improves. I like myself better than I did at the beginning of this. And other people will feel the same. In this lockdown situation where there's two parts, isn't there? There's the one that is saying, I have now more relationships than I've ever had digitally, and they're all over the globe. This is a prime example this morning. However, I'm confined and restricted to people I can't get away from.
Yeah. The
people that are living in my bubble or however, my home or whatever it might be. And with those, I have to make sure I'm going to work at putting that oxygen on me, feeling how I'm feeling, so that I can then help them have a better relationship with each other that goes through the house.
That's true. And before I go, I just want to say a really big thank you to you, Bob, because people probably don't know, not only have you done all the administration, you've had, you've been mentoring me to try and put things in a way that doesn't have any jargon in it. And you've just given so much time and energy, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And it's been an absolute pleasure. For all of you out there that's on here, we're coming to an end now. As I said, this recording will be available for you. You'll get an email, I think it's either today or tomorrow, with a link going through that. This is, as I said, the seventh one in a series I've done over the whole of lockdown, over the whole of pandemic. If you'd like a link to my Dropbox to download those as well, that's also be available. And I am in the process now of putting another one of these together, which should be out and ready probably within 4 weeks. So 4 weeks' time, expect another young visit. But Lynn, a huge thank you from me, a huge thank you from the audience out there. Thank you to all these people that's given up the Saturday morning. And really, good luck.
Goodbye, everybody.
See you all in the future. Thank you very
much
indeed.
Thank you for coming. It really was great. Bye.